Okay, welcome to Forever Bristol City podcast. The season is over and this is the first of our end of season reviews. I'm delighted to be joined by two measured individuals approaching the game from different angles. There's Dave Fevs, the analytical sage of OTIB and various other media, and from the media and former player, always good to have him on the podcast. Chris Honor, good afternoon, gentlemen. Are we already in summer mood, would you say? Chris, you first.
I'm beginning to miss my football already. And we only watched the Man City game last night, which I thought was unbelievable football. But I'm wondering what to do with the next 6 weeks, 8 weeks until the season starts again. And I'm getting a bit nervous about all those journeys to B&Q and all those tasks that my wife is drawing up to keep me busy each Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, what about you, Dave? You were in summer mode or still got half an eye on all the other matches that are still going on, even though it's still not affecting us?
Yeah, still trying to consume as much football as I can. Certainly EFL stuff interesting. Chris watched the Man City game last night. I was glued to the Luton game. Sorry, not the Coventry Middlesbrough game last night as well. More of an EFL addict than Champions League addict. So yeah, I'm trying to watch as much of that as possible. And I guess the England under-20s with Alex Scott will probably find his way onto my iPad as well at some point. If it clashes with work, I'll try and watch that out the corner of the eye. So season not quite over just yet.
I love it because we're already trying to find, you know, games scattered all around the world, aren't we, for the next 6 to 8 weeks?
Yeah. Well, that's true. And if we're going to take it, we're talking about around the world. I used to have, back in the day, I'm talking about 2005, 2006, I used to watch Malaga play very regularly. And Malaga were in the quarterfinals of the Champions League 10 years ago. And here they are this weekend, you know, two games to go. They've got to win both their final games. Otherwise, they're going to go down to the third tier of Spanish football for the first time in about 25 years. And you bear in mind, Malaga is the fifth largest city in Spain. You know, and you talk about financial mismanagement, that's certainly been the order of the day at that club over, I'll say, the last 6 years, most definitely. Anyway, less of that. Bristol City, somebody told me this, it's the third season in a row that we've won 15 games, which is some level of consistency. But I'll come to you first, Chris. It's very simple. I'm going to give 22-23 season a score out of 10, just for the general way it went. What's your score out of 10 and why?
Up until December, I think I would probably give it a 5. And then after the changes and the return to football after the World Cup, I think it was almost a resounding 8. I thoroughly enjoyed my football. I saw progress. I thought they sold Semenyo, bought in a few new bodies. Not all of them are gelled immediately, but I just saw a massive improvement. And I've been one of those people that have kind of watched what Nigel Pearson has been doing for the last 18 months and being in his corner, much against a few people that I know who've tried to criticise, which I kind of struggle to understand. I kind of was crying out about the shoots of recovery and the progress we were making, but now I think we've just began to take off, and I hope that this summer goes in the same kind of direction. I hope he gets all the players he's after and we can really go for it next year. It's been a season of two halves without being nicking a cliche or an
okay. So averages out about a 7 out of 10 for you then, basically, yeah? A marginal improvement on last year. What about you, Dave? I mean, you're always the voice of reason or balance, yeah?
Yeah, I think I'm a 7 as well. I think I was going to say it's been a season of four quarters. I was going to say, just to be slightly different in terms of, I think we had two good runs and then we had two poor runs, and they kind of ended up, you know, backing onto each other. And I think, you know, the World Cup was an obvious kind of breaking, a good point for us to break, I think. And I think we came back from that. You know, we had a little wobble over Christmas, but generally we improved. But I think what we saw probably from the end of January onwards, and I guess Chris alluded to it to some extent, is the selling of Semenyo for me was kind of quite fundamental to everything that happens from that point onwards. We got a couple of players in, early chance to embed them. Yeah, we're not going to lie here and say that Cornick's kind of hit the ground running as such. But, you know, you have to give these players the pre-season, what they know. They're going to be accustomed to being a Bristol City player. Same with Mometi. And I think we've now loosened any kind of restrictions in terms of having to wait to sell players in the summer to move forward. And therefore, you can miss all some of those free transfers as a result. So I think what we've done is we've got our house in order in January, ready to kick on this summer. And we hear people like Tins commenting that, you know, they're close to getting deals done and they're having, you know, advanced talks with players. And I think that's really what January gave us. And I think, you know, results improved for quite a while up until Man City. I think Man City game probably came at a bad time, didn't it, in terms of we'd start to pick up a couple of injuries and we were blowing a bit and it took us a little while to recover. And we ended the season in relatively decent form and never in any trouble.
Mm. I mean, it's interesting. You said halves, you said quarters, and I think you're a seven as well. And I guess I'm going to be generous and say a seven. I look at it like this. The first eight games, we picked up 16 points. Yeah, I think it was 4-4-0 after eight. And then how different it might have been if the Queen hadn't passed away when she did, because we had that break. And then between Christmas, between the resumption after the Queen's passing and, dare I say it, Boxing Day, yeah, that was the low point, the West Brom point. That was a very, very bad period. Then we came back after Christmas and take the cup games out of it. And West Brom, for me, when we did thrash them 4-0 at home, that was a great game. You know, you're thinking, well, this is what we can do. We've put together a run, 4 wins, 5 draws, no defeats in the league. But then, as Dave's just alluded to, after Man City, you know, 13 games post-Man City, 15 points picked up. And if you look at it, if you take the first 8 games of the season and that run of 9 early in the new year, 17 games produced 33 points. The other 29 only produced 26. And that's the problem. You know, we had a good period, then we had a bad period, then we had a good period. And for me, the end of the season, okay, we got a good win at QPR. Yeah. You know, it was a little bit disappointing. So it's progress, but I would say it's baby steps. I mean, Chris, that start of the season, you know, with you know, unbeaten in the first eight, do you think it was the momentum was lost? Because you know what we're like when we have a break for internationals. We're not great. And losing that week for the Queen, that weekend for the Queen's death, we never recovered from that, really, did we?
I didn't really know. I just remember that some of the results we even that we got early on in the season, we didn't possibly deserve. It wasn't as if we were playing free-flowing football. And the drop-off was just... it was going to come because you get found out in this league. I mean, I remember early on the season, QPR and Reading were in the top three, I think, at one stage. And, you know, both of those two teams, well, Reading ended up getting relegated and we absolutely battered QPR in the last game of the season and they were looking or struggling to stay up. So, you know, the Championship is a long, long season. I mean, I mean, look at Middlesbrough. They went the opposite way. They started in the bottom three and so did Coventry. So, if you had three guys on talking about Coventry's season or Middlesbrough's season, they would be saying the complete opposite. They would say, what a season we've had. We've had a terrible start, brilliant finish. Maybe yeah. Not
from and both of those clubs did what Nottingham Forest did, basically, didn't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. And only the Championship really can do that because it's the inconsistencies of all the teams in the Championship is glaring. And I think this year was a real disappointment for any fan of a smaller club because the teams with the parachute payments, apart from the obvious two who went up, have really struggled. And we could have got into that top six. This was a pretty average year,
yeah.
A pretty poor year for Championship football. And if you were ever going to get in the top six this year, it's going to be this year.
Yeah.
And I think we had a missed opportunity.
If you look at those if you look at those 29 games, as I say, apart from the two good spells, if we'd have just picked up, well, we needed another 10 points, didn't we? Which was nothing, really. But yeah, look, we are where we are. There's no point in crying over spilt milk. Dave, Chris alluded to, you know, the fact that there was a change and the good fortune came when the club switch formations. Now, I know you don't subscribe to rigid formation, but we had essentially been playing with three central defenders and wing backs. And over the, and I think it was the second half at Swansea where it happened, we had to change to a flat back four. And it was more by accident than by design, really, wasn't it? And that seemed to set the scene for the rest of the season, every game.
I think there are a couple of things. I think we have to look at the makeup of the players we had and what types of players they had. And that's probably why I think at the start of the season, even though Pearson's been on record loads of times and said he doesn't really like a back three system, he likes a back four. But I don't think he felt he had the personnel to play it. And I think he made comments about Zach Viner earlier on the season. You know, we'll probably talk about him later and how well he's done. But also, I thought, you know, I remember him calling someone caught in an interview said, "Oh, why aren't you playing Rob Atkinson centre in a three?" He said, "Because he's an introvert." And, you know, that's why he was playing Cal Naismith there. And I think over a period of time, the influence of people like Cal Naismith as a talker, as a leader, and even Andy King, when he played at centre back, I think helped the likes of Zach Viner when he then had to go and play in a four, realise what it was all about. So I think, you know, people are saying, oh, he should have played the back four from the start of the season. I think he kind of was developing people like Zach Viner to make him comfortable to play it so that when we did switch, he was ready to do it and not exposed. And I think, what you know, I might be wide of the mark here. Before we switched in that game against Swansea, we had two tough away games. We had Millwall away and Coventry away, and we came out of those in bad form with two away points.
Yeah,
and I think that was the kind of turning point. I don't disagree that we look better as a back four, and I think, you know, I'm perhaps a little bit surprised he didn't go to it early, but I think it's because Pearson thought his players weren't ready to do that. And I think then it freed up people like Naismith to go in to the midfield. His ability to break the lines and free people like Alex Scott, you know, and give him, you know, the ability to get on the ball facing forward rather than his back to goal is a massive advantage. And I think that was, you know, part, you know, lots and lots of different things feeding into it rather than it just purely being about going to a back four. I think that, you know, that's why I've kind of often said, I don't think it's formations, it's players, but you've got the right players to be able to do it. You've got the right, you know, leaders out there to do it. You know, we all moaned about Andy King when he gave away a few goals playing at centre back, but I do think it was almost a bit of a, I'm just going to suck this up, because the long-term benefit of Zach Viner learning from a talker like Andy King will benefit us in the long run. And I think that's what Pearson's prepared to do. He's prepared to play this slightly medium-term long game to get the right benefits out or right performances out of the players.
Mm-hmm. You're nodding your head there, Chris. You concur with what Dave was saying, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. I think the idea was we became hard to beat. And by playing three centre-halves, that was the general idea. And the players began to grow in confidence. And they understand the 4-4-2 or 4-4-3 system probably a little bit better. And as their confidence grew, they were able to then play with less players at the back. Zach Viner, as you mentioned, was a lot better. Rob Atkinson understood the situation as well. And you didn't need that extra bit of security at the back that the extra centre-half gives you. I just think that he was trying to protect his players, especially in the back four or five, by playing with an extra centre-half. And I agree. I remember covering the game for BBC Radio before the lads went away at Millwall and Coventry, and I didn't expect them to get any points. And they went there and they got admirable draws, and they came away and they had played well, and they went into the next home game and they played like a different team. Again, I think that was the turning point of the season. I think Bevs is hit the nail on the head with all these points that he just made.
Yeah, and you don't think the fact that, you know, the end of the last 13 games post-Man City, I mean, it's easy to make excuses for that because there were key players injured, but, you know, it was good. It was quite a morale booster to get that 3 points at QPR on the last day, wasn't it? It sets you into the summer period on the back of finishing with a win, because effectively you've won two of the last three, haven't you? Yeah,
it's huge. It's huge, David, to win away from home on your last game. It gives all the players a chance to sort of remember all the positive things of the season, to go and sit on the beach, go and work on their fitness when they're called into the club twice a week or whatever it is, three times a week towards the end of the month. Yeah, it's a huge morale boosting win. And I must admit, it was something I noticed on the pitch. The way he was getting the players together in a group, I know he was trying to get De Silva in front of the fans and he was trying to get Calas there and players to say their goodbyes, whether it was Alex Scott. But I just get the impression that he's building a really close-knit group of players with a fabulous attitude to hard work and team spirit. And I think we've got a bit of a chance. I've got this tiny little bit of hope. And, you know, that's the thing that always kills us, isn't it?
It's the hope that kills being a Bristol City fan. That was season 56 for me last season. But there we go. Let's look at the team in departments. I mean, loosely what is midfield and what's attack. But let's start at the back with goalkeeping. I mean, we started, Dave, the season with Dan Bentley in goal. You know, number one choice without question. He moved in January because he was out of contract, I think, this summer, yes, and he was not going to accept. And there he is just a week ago, giving a decent display, making his debut at Old Trafford, yeah? But goalkeeping, we're left with Max O'Leary. That transition from Dan to Max, that was more financial than form-based, really, wasn't it? Yes, he was one of the players to usher out the door.
I think it was a lot to do with form, actually. Dave, I think what happened was, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that Dan Bentley on paper is a better keeper than Max O'Leary. But I think Bentley's confidence in his own ability and therefore rubbing off onto his defence actually created a bit of a kind of negativity in the team. I'm not saying, you know, negative from a personality point of view, just I think we always thought we were going to concede. And, you know, his perhaps indecision about coming for balls in the box, you know, started to labour on his centre-backs, and that puts him under pressure. And, you know, Chris being the ex-pro, but even at me playing local level, if you've got a dodgy keeper behind you, it makes life hard. You never trust what's going to happen, and you try and overcover things, overcompensate for things, and you end up not doing the things you need to do. And I think Max came in, and Max was decisive. You know, I think he made a big difference. When he comes for the ball, he comes and punches. I don't care if he punches or catches. No. You know, his defenders look confident. Nigel actually said that, I think, a couple of weeks ago. He said Max's decision-making is excellent, and I think that's what's helped them. And the whole defence looks more confident as a result. I don't think he's any better kicking. He probably positions himself a little bit higher than what Bentz did. Bentz kicked a lot of balls from, like, near his own goal line, you know, perhaps, you know, wide of the box, whereas Max clears them from the edge of the box. And I think that has a little bit of help in terms of getting us up the pitch. But I think Max is a better keeper for us and our defence at this point in time than what Bentz was.
Okay, that's a fair comment. And Chris, what would you say? I mean, you can't really say Bentz is a dodgy keeper when he's given a chance for Wolves. And I don't think Dave was saying that out and out a dodgy keeper, but I do get what you said about the confidence piece. But, you know, Max, good enough for you to be number one choice next season, but then it's looking like with Badgett not living up to expectation, you know, we're going to have to sign a goalkeeper in the summer, aren't we? Do we sign a number two to Max, or do we get a Nicky Mainpar, who was probably the best number two to whoever the first choice goalkeeper was coming in? What do you think of Max and Dan, and what do we do in that one area?
I think Max is number one. I think they'll bring maybe a young lad in to support him. I think he's 26 now. And potentially he's the right person for the club at the moment. I think his wages are within the budget, so the financial restraints are respected. I do like what Fev said. Sometimes when you've got a goalkeeper who's reluctant to come and take crosses, you're always trying to overcompensate and go with runners when you wouldn't really go with them when you'd go and attack the ball. Now you're thinking, do I go with the ball? Do I go with my runner? It's all that split second millimeters that means a draw or a victory or a loss in a draw. And for me, Bentley had that terrible game at Birmingham. and he got battered. We the whole team played poorly, to be fair.
Mm.
And I remember thinking, sat at home watching the game, thinking he should have come for that cross, this cross. And then Pearson just went, had enough of him. I don't know what was said in the dressing room. I don't know whether there was some kind of row. But he never played after that, did he? And he made the change and brought Max in. I think Max had half a dozen games. And then Bentley went back in for a bit, didn't he? And then Max came back in and he's been there ever since.
Yeah.
But yeah, I watched Bentley at the weekend, didn't he? Do great, some brilliant saves. And we know that he's got that in his locker. He's a fantastic stopper.
Good shot stopper. Good shot stopper.
But I think Max is perfect at the moment. He's better on the ball. He's a better distributor. And I think he fits that young profile of the back four. He knows, he obviously knows Zach very well. He's of that age group where they all want to grow. They all want to learn at the same pace. And there's no big time Charlies there who crush each other's confidence when things go wrong.
Yeah, I'll stick with you, Chris, on starting about on the defence. And it's more a case of who hasn't been available or not included as much as who has. We've already talked to Zach Viner. What a season, and totally justified. I was at the Player Awards a fortnight ago. He was the Players' Player of the Year in the squad, which was great to see Zach get that. And, you know, even we, or me, I hold my hand up. You know, I was saying this time last year, Zach is a good squad player, and that's about it. But if we look at the defence, Chris, Kane Wilson was a marquee signing, League Two Player of the Year, you know, about half a dozen goals, played into the narrative of the attacking wing-back. I mean, he's had, for whatever reason, a wasted year. He's not even featured as an overage player. What on earth has gone wrong there? And he was a marquee signing, wasn't he?
He's definitely dressed up to be one of our big signings of the summer, and he's just completely underachieved, hasn't he? He's obviously been disappointed and his season's been decimated by injury, but even when he came back for that one game, like he came on for the last 20 minutes and I thought he was blowing terribly. I was watching him, he was trying to get, you know, I don't know whether his body was full of lactic acid and his legs had gone, but he'd only been on for 15-20 minutes and he went to take a throw in front of us and I thought, oh my gosh. And then I think he was then injured off the back of that over a 20 minute cameo. It was just, he's just had an awful season, first season at the club. And I just hope there's more to him. I don't know whether Pearson's going to give him a little bit of time to build his Bristol City career, but they're looking at this lad from Aberdeen who can play it right back as well. And with George Tanner there, how many fullbacks do you actually need on this right side? So maybe he might be one of the ones that is eased to the exit door during the summer. If Nigel Pearson thinks he doesn't fit the profile of person and player that he's trying to build a squad around.
And it's interesting you say about the profile and the type of player, because you wonder whether it's a mental thing with him, because he did have an injury. And we've said before, the step up from League Two to Championship from a fitness perspective is very marked. I mean, Dave, you know, that's a very balanced view on the Kane Wilson season from Chris. You know, we had high hopes for him, didn't we? And it's worrying that we're not getting any feedback that he's injured now. He's not playing. He's not even been on the bench, you know, when he could have been named on the bench. Do you think he's one for the exit door? His agent's trying to find him a new place and it's a attitude, mental thing?
Certainly possible, isn't it? I think, you know, I remember watching him in the first couple of pre-season friendlies last summer, and he was on fire. And then I actually went to the HPC to watch the double header they had against Forest Green and Exeter. And he went over on his ankle. And that was when Sykes got given his chance to play at right wing back. And I think he played at Bournemouth and Plymouth and did quite well and started the league season. So he kind of, that didn't help. But then he came back fit and he didn't do a lot in the games that he played in, you know, albeit limited minutes. And of course, we kind of find out he's actually probably carrying a knee injury and subsequently had an operation, and that kind of counted him out for the rest of the season. But then I guess it's trying to interpret what Pearson's saying around things like he's got to learn to manage his knee for the rest of his career. You know, I'm not sure what how I interpret that. And is that actually, you know, you're going to be on your way, son? I don't know. I think it'd be a shame if he does, but I think with the players we've got, and say if we do get McCrory from Aberdeen as well, who can play right back. Sykes can play right back if he's needed.
You know, Chris said about Sykes starting the season as a wing back, but Sykes came on in the latter stages of a game quite recently and slotted in at right back, and he's got a tackle in him as Sykes. Yeah. But
so it wouldn't surprise me if he's not here next season. That might be alone somewhere. Might not be, you know, completely out the door. Yeah. I don't know. It's one we'll just have to wait and see. But it wouldn't surprise me.
He's under contract for until summer of 25, according
yeah.
to the marvellous.
Yeah, and you know, he didn't cost us any money.
Chris.
Yeah.
Dave Fev schedule here of all the squad. So at least I got a reference for it. It was a method in my madness asking you for that, Dave.
And Chris will know all about the Bosman as well, won't he? So
Chris also alluded to George Tanner coming in. I mean, he looks very composed. He's a youngster. He's signed a contract extension through to, where is it now, 26? Is Tanner signed up to? Yeah, I think he is, isn't he? Is that right, Dave? Yeah. I'm reading off your schedule. He's looked okay, hasn't he, I would say, Tanner? Dave?
Yeah, he's you know, right back to... You know, we get all these left backs at Bristol City, and no offence here, Chris, but right back is always, you know, he's a solid right back, you know, and that's what George Tanner is. And I think he has got stuff to offer going forward as well. And I think that'll develop over time, but he's very, very steady. And I don't mind it if we're steady down the right and then we've got Pring and whoever bombing down the left. I don't mind if we play a bit lopsided. I've been really impressed with Tanner. I don't think he was meant to come in the side as quickly as he did last season. And they're kind of once again, coming up from League Two and the fitness levels and his hamstring a couple of times kind of held him back. But I think once again, he's been a key part of that defence that's performed much better in the second half of the season.
Chris, Cameron Pring, Nigel, as he's done with a lot of players, he's given them the tough love stuff. Yeah. And Cameron Pring, to me, a year ago, if you ask me what I thought of him, he seemed to be blowing after about 60 minutes, but he's slotted into that left back in a four, and he's been able to move inside as well. But left back in a four, Cameron Pring, for me, particularly the second half of the season, he's, you know, he was bounced around loans, and I think it was Nigel put his arm around him, not last summer, summer before, and said, right, you're going to make it here. And he's given him some tough love along the way. But Cam's had a great season, hasn't he? Yeah, and that he's a first pick for me on that left side, playing in that formation. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. And by the way, Fevs, we played that game where you named all the left backs the club have had for 30 years, and there was a whole list of them. And then you try to do on the right side, and there was about two. You know, it was, you know, some of the names that coming out for the right backs was, you know, it made my skin crawl. And then you went to all the right backs, you went from Scott, Brennan, Bell. It just, the list went on and on. It was just some of the best left foots that you've ever seen at Ashton Gate for the last 30 years. And then you mentioned the right backs and it was Little. And I was like, oh.
Bradley Orr, and I have to go back to then Jerry Sweeney, I think.
Absolutely. And I see how you leapfrogged me then and Louis, so stop it.
Yeah, it's done okay. You're moving right.
Anyway, moving on very quickly.
Cam's done great, hasn't he?
Cam Pring, last year I saw him and I thought this kid has everything. He has the basics of a very, very good player. And that's probably why the club have never got rid of him over the last 4 or 5 years. And like you said, he's been bounced around everywhere on loan. I think it was Portsmouth, here, there and everywhere. And they kept faith with him because he's got the right attributes to be, he's solid. He's strong. He's physically strong. He's mentally strong. Although he was lacking in confidence last year, he's quick. You know, he's not afraid. He's got good ability on the ball. Now it's all coming together at the right time. And there's people talking about him playing in the Premier Division. I mean, that's how quickly he's improved alongside Zach Viner, who, again, the two of them are like Lazarus, aren't they? They've been reborn. They're completely different players from 12 months ago. And for me, they're my two favourites in the whole team. You know, I look at them and I'm so proud to see that they've sorted themselves out. They've been given the chance to grow. And they're local lads and they're doing great. And that's my opinion on Campering. And if Joe Bryan does come and join us, I think Joe will sit in front of him, and Campering will fly around the outside.
We talk about transfers later, but Joe coming in, it's got to be, you know, it's not it's not instead of Cam, it's, you know, and coming into the squad. And okay, Joe could play in front of Cam, or Cam could play in front of Joe, I guess. Would you agree with that, Dave? Since we're talking about...
I kind of, when Campering first kind of broke into the side, I kind of, and start, in fact, when he first came in at kind of left wing, didn't he, when he first came into the side last season, when he settled back into kind of wing back or left back, those runs that he made reminded me a lot of Joe Bryan, those kind of driving runs where he could either go inside or outside.
Mm.
And but what he's got on top of Joe, he's got defensive abilities. And that's not saying Joe Bryan, I think, gets a bit of unfair criticism for saying he can't defend. I think he's perfectly adequate. But Pring's recovery runs, he kind of gets into position early. And one-on-one, he's superb. You know, players just don't try and take him on.
Touch of the Kyle Walkers about Cam with his recovery sometimes, yeah?
I think he's got this presence that people know they're not going to outrun him, so they don't try. Yeah. Well, and that's a huge boost if you've got that, thinking, well, they've only got one option. They're going to have to lay the ball off. I don't need to have to worry. And they'd say the attacking end as well. The amount of assists he's got is vital. He's a great player.
Yeah, sorry, Chris, you were going to say.
He's got great upper body strength as well. You think you're going to get the ball around him, you'd mount off a shoulder. He gets right and close to you, and he's as strong as an ox, and that's why he's able to play centre half towards the end of the year, because he's, you know, you try to bully him, he's a strong boy. And you know, I think we've got to go careful as well. I thought Joe Bryan was absolutely brilliant when he was at he could defend on his he was just so good going forward. I think we forget that he was a good defender. And it'd be interesting to see them both playing together, because you might have to get a harness on the two of them, because if they're flying forward, we're going to have...
I think Pring and Bryan on the left side. And if you think that left-sided attacking midfield role that's allegedly, he never did properly, Callum O'Dowda was always played as that sort of attacking left side, you know. But Pring and Joe on that side. And you can say to Cam, you can do the overlaps, and Joe hang on in there midfield, and then put Joe at left back. Yeah, it gives you options there. So we come on to that. Sticking with you, Chris, on the centre of the defence. I mean, George, what's his name? Not George Tanner. Rob Atkinson. You know, he's done enough to be considered a first pick. I'll tell you what I think about what City should be doing in the transfer market in that area. We without Callas. Now, to use an Ian Gay phrase, playing Cal Naismith as a central defender is an antic, not a tactic, yeah? Cal is the architect of most of the problems. His self-destruct button, Cal at the back, and, you know, he's only with injury you'd play Cal in the back four, really, wouldn't you? Would you agree with that?
No. No, I don't. I think he's more than capable of playing at centre-half. I think that position now is responsible for where all the football begins and starts. That's how you take the ball from the keeper. Talking about a different world and a different football team, Man City start, and that's the way of the world from goalkeeper all the way up the pitch. If you don't present the ball into midfield in a complementary kind of way, the ball is lost in midfield, or where the ball is played into the front men and it's overhit, then the ball comes straight back. With Naismith, he's just such a lovely footballer. He had a problem, obviously, at the start of the year with his individual mistakes, and it cost us a few points. It might have even cost us enough points to miss out on the playoffs if you add them all up.
But, well, it's interesting you say that, because I'm going to pick two games. Sunderland on the opening day of the season.
Yeah, that's why.
Norwich. Norwich away. Two mistakes in the first 15, 20 minutes. That's 6 points.
But that goes to show how close we are. You know, yeah. if we can get rid of these silly mistakes that we were creating at the start of the season, I think where they'd be there or thereabouts. But Naismith, for me, is such a lovely footballer. He's a player that needs to play a lot, though. He can't, I mean, he came back into the team, won the games towards the end of the season, and I think he was only on for 20 minutes, and he gave the ball away every time trying to overplay. He kicked the ball with a lead foot or a lead boot on several occasions. His touch wasn't quite there.
Yeah.
He wasn't turning well. But that's sometimes just, he needs to play a lot of football.
Okay. But interesting you say that he has a place in the back four, and because that's where everything stems from. Right. Rather than talk about midfield, I want to jump to the forward line. I come to you for, I say the forward line, the offensive players, Dave. I come to you for, and I'm just going to read the names off here. Cornick, Mometi, Vyman, Conway, Bell, Wells. And then the next name that appears on there, who has been making the squad but hasn't played for the team, is Seb Palmer-Holden. If you look at all those players, none of them are this big man or this number nine, to use a phrase. Yeah. And if you look at the goal, you know, Tommy Conway, a revelation this season, so Sam Bell. Naki Wells, showing why he's, well, it was a lot that we paid for him, but model professional, bought the youngsters on, fit as a dog, fit as a butcher's dog, even now, Naki, right? If, you know, what's your thoughts on that? And Nigel implied in a recent interview that don't really need to strengthen up front, because if we do, they got to be better than what we got, because we have got numbers there, haven't we? But, you know, is that a good enough strike force to put us in the top six with no additions?
Yeah, because I think it all depends on what happens behind them. And I think we've shown in the second half of the season that conceding less goals means we're in more games and we pick up more points than actually perhaps when we were a bit more free scoring early on in the season. And I think some of it will come from service. And I think, you know, Chris has talked about Cal Naismith there. When Cal Naismith plays and Matty James play, we pick up a damn sight more points than when they don't play. And I think what we're massively dependent on this season has been having key players fit. And when those key players have been missing, we've stretched a bit too thin. And that's a consequence of the financial issues that we've had to go with the type of squad we've got. And I think what we're trying to address this summer is creating some strength and depth. But when I look at the front players we've got enough variety in there. You know, I guess, you know, the first strikers I saw for Bristol City were Joe Royal and Mick Harford. Mick Harford is probably one of my favourite ever players. But I did grow up on a kind of diet of Glyn Riley and Steve Neville, with two little blokes up front.
Yeah.
And so therefore some of my football philosophy, if there is such a thing, is you don't need to have a big man, just need good players. You know, they have good service. And I think we've got enough about us in that forward line to do that, you know, especially if you've got people like Vyman prompting it as well from coming from behind. Sykes, you can include in that, playing in that kind of right forward role, who's chipped in with goals as well. I think we got enough there. It's not a priority. Yeah. The right player comes available, then, you know.
Yeah. I mean, to back up your argument, Dave, to back up your argument, if you look at the promotion team of 07-08, where Darren Byfield was a top scorer, we finished sort of third or fourth, whatever, with a goal difference of plus one, and we didn't have a big man, but I'm going to pick three other promotion seasons, and that's when we went up. When we went up in 89-90, we had Taylor and Turner, yeah, Robbie Turner, Bob Taylor. In 14 and 15, we had Aaron Wilbraham up there, and what a revelation he was, because he was one of those journeyman centre forwards that probably had the best season of his career with us, and what a player on the field. But what you're saying, Dave, really is that, you know, from that forward mix, there's enough there to do the business. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Conway's a star. I remember seeing him for the first time on loan at Bath City, and he scored two on his debut, and he looked about 8 years old, but he just had something about him. You think, And he's got that bit of nastiness as well. And I wish that's something that Sam Bell would kind of learn as well. Just that little bit more physicality, that little bit more edge to him. But Conway, you know, could easily be like 20 goals next season and 20 million moves to the Premier League.
Somebody was trying to place a bet, I saw on Twitter. Could they get a bet somewhere on Conway to get 20? But, you know, that would be a big achievement. Chris, coming to you, the same area of the field, I said Naki Wells is sort of, you know, he's 33, is he, this summer, I think he is, or 32, I don't know. But he's been given a contract extension, and he was silent all through 21, 22, when he was either played out of position or not played at all. But he's been a great influence, probably on and off the pitch, hasn't he, with the youngsters? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his relationship is quite well known with Conway, that they get on very well. And they worked together in reserves last year when neither of them were part of the SMN trio of lads who were scoring goals. I think Conway is our number one forward at the moment. I think he would be the first pick with Naki Wells as support to him as an impact sub. I think if we went for the big towering centre forward like the Lee Johnson used to favour Juric to toss on at the end of games, that is an option, but I don't know whether the finances will stretch that far. Then I look around and I think, where are we going to get Mometi? How are we going to get more goals from midfield? If Alex Scott does leave, who's going to be our number 10? I don't think Vyman's got enough about him to be a number 10. Maybe it's Mometi. Sykes, for me, has been a revelation, even. Start again. At the right side, mainly attacking rather than defending. I don't like him as a fullback. I like him in the last third. And then, for me, Bell, as Fez just said, probably need to spend the summer in the gym, because I think that did
Conway. He needs to have a little bit more physicality, doesn't he? Yeah,
he does. He needs to get his arms up, use his body a little bit more. He needs a little bit nice. He looks as if his shorts and his top weren't made for him. They were made for someone else when I see him on the pitch. and I'm sure his dad's on to him. And I want him to do great, because he's from Nelsie as well. And that's obviously where I grew up as a school kid. So I've got a little bit of an eye on him, and I want him to do desperately well for the club. And it's nice to see the kids coming through. Yeah. I've got to be honest, I was quite surprised how many games he played towards the end of the season in preference over Mometi, who'd only just signed. You know, maybe Pearson is just trying to give him 10 games at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Just to feel comfortable at championship level. And to be fair, that is what Pearson sometimes thinks. He thinks, nothing to lose. Let's get this kid ready for next year. Give him the taste for it. Hopefully he'll be so hungry, he'll spend all summer in the gym, build himself up, and next year you'll see the real Sam Bell.
Yeah. I mean, Harry Cornick, everybody said, oh, he needs a pre-season. But Harry Cornick, he's either 30 now or he's 30 next birthday. You know, and you look at the intensity that Luton play at, right? And I know he wasn't playing for them this season as much as last season, but he has been here half a season now, Harry Cornick, and there have been a few glimpses, but there's nothing, you know, he's not going to be a salvation for us. And I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but at 30, you know, what's a pre-season at Bristol City going to be? It's not going to be any more intensive than what Luton are, the way they seem to play with that 110%. What do you think?
I don't think he's done terribly badly. I must admit, towards the end of the season, he put in a couple of decent performances. I can't remember the away game he played well in, but off the back of the away game, he was a lot better at Ashton Gate. And I think he's another one, a bit of a slow starter. I don't know how his career would have panned out had he scored on his debut when he was one-on-one on the goalkeeper. Maybe we will have all elevated him into God status very early, and you know, and giving them a little bit of a break. I think sometimes you put a little bit of pressure on yourself as a player, and he's probably over trying. He's probably getting himself into positions now that he wouldn't probably take up, because he's trying to cover so many different aspects of his game, or show so many different aspects of his game. I think he's a good squad player. But yeah, the decisions I'm going to leave up to Nigel Pearson because
yeah, absolutely. Okay, Dave. excuse me. Everybody says what I just said. Not enough goals from midfield. Not enough goals from midfield. And if we're saying the formation is, I don't know, well, we're definitely saying it's four at the back, and then it's whatever permutations of the six in front. If you protect the back four with Joe Williams, well, you just look at the names that are there, classified midfield players, Matty James, Alex Scott, Joe Williams, Andy King, Mark Sykes, coming back later in the year, Benarous, Dylan Kadji had a flirtation. I think his numbers are going to probably find him out on loan next season. But, well, Masengo's gone. And, well, that's about it. But, look, there we go. Look, we've got Matty James, Alex Scott, Joe Williams, Andy King, Mark Sykes, Eamon Benarous. Maybe you throw Mometi back in there as an offensive midfield. And Alex Scott, you know, our £25 million player. I had a Wolves fan actually ask me what I thought about him yesterday. Yeah, totally off the blue. I'd forgotten the guy was a Wolves fan. But Alex Scott, was it 2 goals, 2 assists, something like that? I mean, it's not, if we lose him, it's not like we're taking away our main creator of goals, is it? What's the problem in midfield, Dave? How do we address it, right? And assuming that Scott goes, that's where the money can be spent, is it not?
Yeah, I think this is the modern day fixation. You know, you can spit your tea out now with data and stats, and I'm the biggest proponent of it, probably, that comes on these podcasts. But, you know, back in the day, no one used to count assists, did they?
No.
You know, it was just goals, and you really only focused on your strikers, how many they scored. You know, we still talk about 20 goal strikers, don't we? Scott got 5 assists and 2 goals this season. But if you looked at the top 10 goals that we scored the other day, there was one away at Blackburn, the Tommy Conway kind of stooping header. Alex Scott creates that goal, don't get an assist for it. Goal away at Preston, where he beats 4 players on the touchline, puts Naki Wells in down the sideline, crosses for Sambell, doesn't get an assist for it. So, you know, you can create goals without getting that little one in your column at the end of it. And I think that's what he does. And I think that's, you know, we were talking about Cal Naismith as well. You know, how many times does Cal Naismith break the lines of a pass that gets us on an attack? And that's where, you know, you start to be able to use some of that data that you can get to say, what are they doing to influence the game and influence goals? So I don't worry too much that Alex Scott isn't scoring or assisting in, you know, in pure terms. What I do care about is what he does when he gets on the ball, who he's feeding and where he's feeding those players. So I don't worry about it too much. I would like more goals from midfield. You know, if we go back to, you know, times gone by and, you know, we've had, you know, people like Freeman scoring lots of goals, you know, I guess, you know, even, you know, talking about Joe Bryan a little bit as well. Joe Bryan always had a goal in him, especially that,
yeah,
that, you know, 17-18 season where he played kind of more as a left winger as well. So I think,
well, that's it. That's,
yeah,
what
we could
earlier,
do with more goals.
If you've got Bryan in front of Prim, you've got the best of everything over on that side.
Yeah. I think we miss out. Sorry, Dave, just to finish up, and I think we miss out a little bit as well when Atkinson went and did his ACL, because we suddenly stopped taking kind of corners into the box because we had no aerial threat. And I think, you know, typically in the past, you know, in recent times, we had Aidan Flint, who got, you know, 6 or 7 goals every season from centre back. What was Atkinson on, 3 or 4 this season? I think we missed that as well. And it'd be nice to think that we might have some centre backs contributing next season as well, if only to put off other, you know, defenders to make room for other players as well. Yeah. So
I've often said over the years, we've not had a midfield since Gerry Gow left, and probably more recently Gary Shelton. You know, Gary Shelton and Gerry Gow are two midfield players that I build my perception of what a good midfielder is. And when you look, you know, Matty James got a lot of minutes out of him. Andy King came in towards the end of the season, since Christmas. There's some good stuff in there. Joe played more minutes for us this season than any other season he's been here. How do we address the goal-scoring problem from individual midfield players, Chris? And selling Alex Scott, if it does happen, you know, I mean, if he's still here, he's a first pick. That's one of those midfield berths gone. Yeah, almost, isn't it? Yeah. So well, how do we address those problems?
Well, I don't know whether you heard the interview with Nigel Pearson that he did with Jeff, I think on Monday night on Sound of the City. But that was one of his kind of frustrations this season, that we don't score goals from midfield. I presume he's taken out the likes of Sykes and the Bells out of that equation. Maybe he's just referring to the middle of midfield, because obviously Alex Scott hasn't scored many, Matty James hasn't scored many, and Joe Williams hasn't scored many. So, you know, he's probably complaining a little bit about that. But for me, we don't break into the box enough. You know, we don't have box-to-box runners. We have Joe and Matty James who sit. Maybe he was expecting Alex Scott to get in the box a little bit more. We kind of always are looking to score the perfect goal, and we don't shoot from the edge of the box as much as we certainly did 20 years ago. There was, you know, it doesn't get an extra point for walking the ball into the net, do you? So have a shot from anywhere if the chance comes about. For me, I just think we've just gone, you know, Bristol City fans, I think, love their wingers. So most of our goals come from crosses or from work in the wide spaces or wide areas. Perhaps we just need to work a little bit of interplay in and around the block, in and around the box, and work a little bit more around in those areas. One, twos, balls around the corners, lots of little runners. It's something that we can work on once we get little relationships built up between attack and defence, attack and midfield.
Dave?
Yeah, I think Nigel also said, you know, a little while ago that when we were playing the counter-attacking football, you know, mainly first half of the season, that it's not unusual that all your goals are scored by your forward players because they're so far ahead of the ball that, you know, they're the only ones going to be getting on the end of chances. And we certainly saw that last season with Wyman, Martin and Semenyo. You know, Andy got 20 on, the other two both got double figures. And, you know, that's the vast majority of our goals. And I guess we've changed the way we've played a little bit since Christmas, and a little bit more possession heavy. And I think that leads into what Chris has just said there. When we get good kind of territory in the kind of final third, whether that's wide or in more central positions, we need to be a little bit more creative, and we need to get those, you know, third man runs, you know, off a little 1-2 with someone breaking into the box, maybe like someone like a Brownie would have done previously for us. We haven't really got that type of player who's kind of busting to get in the box off of someone's layoff. And I think if we can address that, and that might be if Alex Scott goes, we don't try and get an Alex Scott replacement, we try and get someone a bit different, but actually complements the way we want to.
Isn't that what some people say Dave Mometi could do, is playing in that lively, jinky little role? And when he came on as a sub, I thought he ran out of steam after the first few games he played. He was sort of becoming less and less effective. But when he came on in the last home game, I think it was, for 20 minutes, he looked lively again, and he put in some crosses, because I think our dead ball kicking, I know we haven't got height in the box, but it's a bit mundane, isn't it? We haven't got a free kick specialist now like we used to have, or we don't seem to, do we? How many times do we remember how Mickey Bell used to score free kicks and Alan Walsh and stuff like that, you know? And you get 10 goals a season through free kicks and good from corners, but we don't do that. But Nigel's, this is his season now, isn't it? And Chris, it was interesting in Jeff's interview with Steve Lansdowne, and he said as much in another interview, it might even have been at Senior Reds, that there is friction. I sense a degree of friction sometimes between the manager and the chairman, and Nigel's that sort of guy anyway, and he's seems to be begrudging in his praise in terms of what Nigel has achieved, yeah? And he seems to have a love interest, Steve, with Mark Robbins at Coventry. But, you know, we've said on the podcast, yeah, you know, he's improved us. You know, we're going to invest money this summer, assuming Scott goes and we start investing money. We're going to give Nigel more money than has been spent for about 5 years, potentially. Yeah, here's a man who could, this time next year, be gone. Has he done enough in your book, Chris, for contract negotiations to actually... just give him a year extension. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Gosh, I'll pay for him to stay in. You know, that's how much I want him to stay. But I just think he's on the right path. I mean, it's sometimes better the devil you know with Nigel. I think we know he can be abrasive a little bit. His interviewing characteristics are sometimes quite difficult. He will tell it exactly as it is. And when things are going well, he's no different. He will tell the truth. And that's what I like about him. I would go, you know, again, Jeff was doing the show on live on Monday night, and I texted him very quickly during the show. And I said, Jeff, me and you would pay for this guy because he's just honest. And do you know, there's not many people honest in professional sport. And because you've got that respect for him, you'll run through brick walls for him because he's, you know, sometimes you might not like what you hear from him, and that might upset you, and you've got to move on. You've got to get on with it. But he's got so much experience in the game. What we want to go, you know, lots of people were very critical of him early, being an old dog, and you couldn't teach him new tricks, and the game's moved on. But what he brings in coaches to coach, and he's the manager of the club. He's the one he creates the atmosphere, he creates the standards. Everyone toes the line to his levels of expectations, and he manages the club. And I think it would be absolutely stupid to get rid of the guy and give him an extension now. And that's if you want to say
give him an extension now. I mean, it was interesting. I was at Senior Reds lunch today, and Phil Alexander, the chief exec, was there, and he was at Palace for 26 years, and Phil Alexander has been under certain chairman like Ron Knowles, yeah, and Simon Jordan. But he said, I've seen lots and lots of managers, yeah. And he said, Pearson is right up there, just what you said, his level of detail, his general demeanor, and everything else like that. And I think there's an image that people have of Nigel, which goes back to the ostrich comment and his general abrasiveness, that I spoke to him for about 5 minutes, first interaction I've had with him at the Players Awards, and he was really nice bloke. But like all managers, they're going to have their little foibles. Dave, Chris has agreed with me, we should be talking about a contract extension for Nigel, because it gives players coming the chance to know that the manager that is signing them is going to be around, yeah? Do you think it's premature, or do you think Lansdowne's hedging his bets?
I guess I haven't really thought about it too much, Dave, in terms of, you know, whether you have to do it now or, you know, at some point during the season. I'm a big fan of Nigel. I kind of echo a lot of what Chris has said there, but, you know, the way he manages people. And that's not just the players. He's kind of a facilitator. He's more than a football manager, isn't he? You know, he's together with, you know, the job that Richard Gould did as well. You know, they sorted this club out from being in a complete mess. You know, we've all got enough history of this club to know that normally we end up having to do this rebuild in the third tier, not staying in the second tier. And I think, you know, it sets us back a couple of years, and sometimes it takes us God knows how many years to get out of the third tier. We've kept our position. We've gradually improved. And I think a lot of that's down to Nigel. I think he's an empowerer of people as well. I think he's so secure in his own ability that he can have people around him that are challenging him. He don't want yes men around him.
No.
And therefore, you know, hence, you know, he'll bring the right people in to do the right job. I thought we missed a trick when, you know, whatever we think of Dean Holden's appointment, not having Tinian in as some kind of like director of football type role. Then I think Dean missed someone. We didn't give him really the tools. We didn't want him really butting up against Mark Ashton. We needed someone else in between. I think Nigel's all about getting the structure right to take the club forward. And I think we've had 2 and a bit years of rebuilding. This, you know, I'll caveat this slightly. This is his squad from this point onwards.
Yes.
But let's not forget, this is probably not the squad that he would have taken forward having been here 2 years if there weren't a financial mess beforehand. He'd have probably got the squad better quicker. So okay. I think it's a really good position to be in.
Chris, go on.
Well, I was also interested about what he said about, are we still a selling club, when he was asked that by Jeff on Monday night. Are we going to continue to be Because has the club found that if you carry on selling all your best players, you're not going to progress? That was, I mean, that is a big question. You can't keep building, progressing all the academy players into the first team and then selling them just beyond their potential or before they achieve their potential if you want this club to move forward. At some stage, you're going to have to keep them together, and hopefully there's enough of them coming together at the same time that we can all move together at the same time.
Well, that was the hallmark of success in 76. But again, I look at Luton and Coventry, because there they are in the playoff final that we're looking to. You know, how have they got academy players coming through? Do they sell their best players? You know, Chris, what's the fundamental difference?
But they've all grown together, haven't they? They've all grown together, David. They've come up from the lower reaches of the Football League or even from the conference, as in Luton's. And they've grown all at the same time. So none of them are getting ahead of themselves. All of them want to play with their pals. They're all at the same level and they want to progress. And we may be just building that kind of atmosphere at the club where there's enough young kids all growing and moving into those levels of professionalism that they can push next year on. And with a few little tweaks, a few little experienced players around them, we might just have the right team and the right combinations next year to achieve something.
Yeah. Do you concur with that view, Dave?
Yeah, I do. I think I don't think we were quite there with Steve Cotterill, but the kind of fundamental principles were there with Cotterill around, I've got a group of players together. I've got my boys, how he used to refer to them. Some of them had obviously been brought in from outside, but they were young enough to be kind of groomed to how Cots wanted them to work, with the steady old heads of Will Bram around to keep them on the straight and narrow, and you know, only on the Costa coffee shop, not anywhere else. And he'd built a team. And I think that season we went up, he was after two or three players to just supplement that squad with, whilst also probably giving, you know, I think at the time Keith Burt had called out Joe Bryan, Bobby Reid, and Wes Burns is kind of like the three academy starlets to kind of come through. And I guess you were hoping there'd be another batch behind that, which probably like your Lloyd Kellys and players like that. So I think that was definitely what he was trying to do. And I think that's what Nigel's, you know, trying to do. I think it's sound kind of football management, really. And that's what Luton and Coventry and Millwall have done, based on, I guess, the other key component is excellent recruitment.
Excellent recruitment. Yeah, interestingly, I read Cots has lost Keith Burt up at Shrewsbury, and that seems a bit of a mess up there. I think they brought in a new director of football or something above Cots, and first you read about it was in the paper. Just want to wrap up each of you with a few quick questions. Chris, you first. On Thomas Kallas, there's a contract on the table. There's an offer. Jada Silva, there's an offer. Do you think they'll both be gone? And Kallas, do you think we should say the offer's there? And so, because we need to, if Kallas is going to be here, Pearson likes him. We need to move on, though, don't we? What do you think with Kallas' situation?
He's obviously a decent championship centre half. My biggest concern is his injury issues, a little bit alongside the Baker that we've just had. You know, he was an executive, Nathan Baker. We had exactly the same situation two seasons ago. He was given a contract offer, and then unfortunately, he had those head injury issues, which curtailed his career, which was sad. I think the hardest thing for any professional employee is how it must be really hard to be told to go out there on a Monday morning or start of each week and to be valued at less money than you were the previous year by the same employer. So if you're still expected to do the same job, but for half the salary. So I don't know whether Kallas has got to that stage where he can mentally compute that. Unless he is, he should move on. I think he has to understand where the club are. He's got to understand his age. He's got to understand how the
football... He's got to understand where football is as well, Chris, hasn't he, really?
Absolutely. The football landscape since COVID, all that kind of stuff. He has to understand that. But sometimes if the penny doesn't drop, you're better off moving, because if you haven't got the right attitude, you're not going to be the same player. And for me, I can't see him being being able to accept that he's worth half the money he was previously on, and nor is, you know, nor can I see Jay De Silva.
And Jay, who played reasonably well in the final third of the season when he came on, it looks like he's going to have options anyway, Jay, doesn't it? With, you know, if you say Birmingham or
a Milton. He could have gone to Coventry, but they might be in the first of it, in the Premier Division. So that job, you know, that opportunity might have gone. But for me, I think it's, I think both of them have options. I think there's lots of clubs who will take either of them.
Yeah. And Dave, really same for you on Kalas and De Silva. I mean, I think De Silva is probably going to go. Yeah. And Kalas.
Yeah. I think De Silva will go. I think Nigel's careful wording around we offered him a contract in January kind of probably says it all for me. If I'm putting two and two together and maybe getting five, which probably says we've given him an offer. The fact that he hasn't signed it now is because he's off. That's my Kalas. I can't decide one way or the other. And right. And I kind of said to someone else the other day, whatever will be. And I'm not going to say, you know, if he stays and then he gets injured, I'm not going to say in hindsight we should have never signed him. And if he goes and plays 40-odd games somewhere in Germany or wherever, then I won't moan about that either. I'll just accept whatever it is.
Yeah, what will be will be. Chris?
Dave, would you be surprised if he stayed? Either of you, would you be surprised if he stayed?
No, because I think Nigel really rates him. And
I think Nigel said enough that he would want him to stay. I mean, if I had a choice, Kalas with a poor injury record staying or Jay De Silva staying, I'd let De Silva go and I'd take a chance on Kalas for the reasons that Dave said. Yeah.
I think as well, just to kind of finish up on that, I know he's only played a handful of games, but when he's played this season, he's looked really good. And I think some of that is because he's not having to do the work of other players as well. So Viner's now become a bona fide centre-back. He doesn't have to babysit him anymore. No. You know, he can concentrate on his own game. And we saw him actually play kind of left of a two, didn't we, as well, which is where he plays for the Czech Republic.
I think
really at home as well.
I think it's important if Kalas stays, and okay, he'd have to play on that left alongside Zach, which means pushing Naismith out. But if Kalas plays, it's important, particularly with Atkinson being out, until November. I don't want to talk about loans or lack of. I mean, I disagree with this developing other players, do other clubs' players. Do we want to do that? Look what happened with Tammy Abraham. If they're good enough, they play. And Tammy Abraham's goals in 2016-17 kept us up. But back to the Atkinson situation, if Kalas goes, right, we would need... And Atkins is not available till November. I don't think it would be a bad idea to go into the loan market for a Premier League defender for 6 months up till January, rather than sign a player on a 3-year contract who's going to be around second string to Atkinson when Atkinson gets fit. He's either got to be better than Atkinson, You know, if Atkinson's got a long-term future here, which he has, we've got to address him not being available for 6 months. And, you know, if Kalas stays, that problem's gone away, just in my view. Right, finally, guys, just to wrap up with both of you, Alex Scott. I don't know if you saw the interview he did on Sky. He's obviously had media training, but just on that interview alone that he did, his delivery, how he said it, you know, he came across as just a polished lad at 19. Yeah, and he's got these three games in the World Cup coming up in a week where, because some of the under-20 England players are still on club duty, he's going to go in the shop window. And if he plays of a standard that he did against Man City, right, because I thought Scott was disappointing in the final quarter of the season, to be honest, I really did. But that's just my view. But if he puts in sparkling performances, it could stick another £5 million. Now, on his value. Now, Pearson, the general view is he might stay another year, right? So, Dave, if he stays another year, we're then in the situation, this time next year, he's only got a year on his contract left. So any increase in value through having another year with us is going to be diminished in whole or part or whatever by the fact that he'll only have a year to go. What about Alex Scott signing? Wouldn't it be good if he wants to play in minutes? Wouldn't it be good if he signed a 1-year extension? Yeah, because he knows if he goes to an elite club, he's not going to get minutes. If he goes to a mid-tier Premiership club, he will. What do you think should happen with Alex Scott? What would you like to see happen?
I'd like him to stay. I'd like him to be part of the, you know, the equivalent of a 1976 promotion side built around young players that's come through and got into the Premier League. That's what I want to happen. I think just to go on, Chris.
No. I was just going to ask you another question. As a City fan, I can 100% agree with you that I would love him to stay. But what would you do if he was your son, for example? What would you say to him as at his stage of his career? Do you think it's the right move for him to stay at Bristol City or go to a big club? For me, it's very important he plays, so staying at Bristol City would be a great idea. But the security of a massive contract, learning from internationals every day of the week in training, that's another option. It's almost a balancing act, isn't it?
If you were his parent, I think it depends on what type of parent you are. So this would be hedging my bets now. You know, if you're a grounded person, not trying to live your life vicariously through your son, for example, then you might have a different opinion than perhaps someone who is trying to, you know, gain the glory through their son. So it's a difficult one to answer. I'll wrapping back around on Dave's point. I think if Alex Scott is here, you know, in September next season, it'll be because he signed the contract. I don't think we would let him stay and have only a year left.
That's the point. Yeah.
In terms of him, I think it depends on how he looks at it. Does he want to use his next club as a stepping stone to a top six club, or does he want to go straight to a top six club? If he wants to go straight to a top six club, he runs the risk of probably not playing as much next season. And I think he wants to play. So it really answers that one. If he's happy to go to a club as a stepping stone, then he'll go this summer because, you know, a Brighton or a Wolves or whoever will come in. He'll get his minutes in the Premier League, and then that will define whether he's good enough to play top six or not. But it's difficult to call, isn't it, really? The good thing for me is that Pearson's making all the noise that he's trying to make him stay.
Yeah. And what do you think, Chris? What's your view, Chris? And as a football professional, what value do you think is what's the price as well?
Well, I try to look at it from every perspective. I try to look as a parent because I want him to do well. I look at him because I just see a young kid out there who's starting his career. Then I see him then I look as a Bristol City fan, and I definitely want him to stay. Then I think of what both of you have just said about the finances of the club and running his contract down, which would cost maybe the club £20 billion. I mean, you've got so many different aspects to weigh up. And all these conversations will be occurring in the background. I had the pleasure of meeting his parents, Alex Scott's parents, at a table after one of his first few games. He was that good. I felt myself just being drawn towards them and congratulating them on their son's, I don't remember if it was his debut or his second game at Ashton Gate. And I said, your son is some player. I said, you know, very best of luck. I'm sure he's going to be a real star. And, you know, 18 months later or a year later, here we are. And he really is. And I just want him to do well for himself. I want to be able to watch him in a few years' time, having gone up through the ladder and playing for a top six club. I just want to see him making the right decisions for him, the club, and everyone, because he seems a decent guy from a decent family who hasn't got ahead of himself. And I haven't seen that interview on Sky, but I would imagine he comes across.
If you listen to that, it was delivered in the diplomatic style of a Gareth Southgate. You know, you looked at him and you thought, God, you know, you're the business, just in terms of his articulation and his general composure, thoughtful and what have you. And somebody said, when they're with England, they get media training, because somebody said, Bellingham, if you hear Bellingham talk, you know, he's got that same, it's a confidence, you know, they know what they're going to say, you know, so he's not got attitude, and that's the key thing. I think it would be good, it'd be interesting if Bellingham went to somebody for 90 million, you know, a season out abroad in Germany for Borussia, is it Borussia Dortmund? Yeah. That would develop his career. People talk about him having a loan back here. He could go to an elite six club. Man City could sign him and loan him back to us for a season. Yeah, but then what would they do with him? Because he's never going to... Well, is he? Is he going to... Yeah, he showed against Man City that he can exist at the same dining table as players of that quality. How does he make that step up? And he could do it with us as a member of a promotion-winning side. I'd love to win promotion automatic, but winning it at Wembley this time next year has got a special thing about it. And it would be great if Alex Scott was still there with us. Yeah.
So, David, so the manager at the moment, Nigel Pearson, he must have players that he must want if Alex Scott goes, and he also has got a kitty of players that he wants if he stays. So, you know, Nigel Pearson needs to know where he stands at the moment as well.
Yeah.
He'll be talking to lots and lots of agents. He doesn't want £25 million on the eve of the season starting, and all the players he wants have now moved on. So it's really important that they get this resolved quite quickly. And I know, you know, last year he got his players very quickly. He wanted them in the building. And from the noise they're making at the moment, they probably will be pushing Alex Scott on a decision whether he's going to stay or go in the next month or so, I would imagine.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Well, look, guys, it's been great talking. As we say, we've got a little bit of a desert in terms of what we do at weekends. B&Q will be being visited, I'm sure. The lawns will be cut. Sun will be absorbed as we sit out in it. But Chris and Dave today, thank you, and enjoy the rest of the sun.
Load 'em all away. What if I've been unlucky? Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When red robins are bobbing along. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up. Get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.